everybody. Welcome to Super Quest Saga, the show where we here at the Dungeon Cast sit around the table and force choke each other. My name is Will Stark, and I will be your sensible Dungeon Master for this evening. And joining me, as always, is
Josh Reeling, playing Sebastian Crenshaw, half-orc paladin.
I am your special guest, Jake, playing Persephone Goldpedal, the druid furball.
And my name is Brian, and I'll be playing human warlock Carter Huttenberg. I'm level 4. No, I'm not. Boom, I'm level 6.
Yeah, you guys have leveled up. And we're going to talk about that later.
Wait, no, this is a space between arcs.
It is. This is interlude 2.
We call it in the business story lube.
Oh. Story lube. Oh my god.
I fucking love it. Okay, so last episode a lot of crazy shit happened. Jesus. Like the elves attacked, you guys got away, there was a dragon, Sebastian lost an arm.
Smash cut. Man. My God, man. Where did it even go? You were gone for like a second. Smash cut back.
So now it's been a week. Ooh. And you guys find yourself along with Prim and Victoria sitting in a booth of a rundown restaurant on a small way station in the outer rim of the galaxy. The way station is named Blue Eden, likely named for the Cerulean Nebula it orbits nearby, which can be seen outside the window of your booth. It's actually a really gorgeous sight.
So it is kind of like the end of Empire Strikes Back.
What?
You know where that iconic scene where they're like all standing in front of that window in front of that like swirling vortex of galaxy shit?
Sure, yeah. Well, this is a nebula. This isn't a swirling vortex of galaxy shit like you just said.
Moving on.
So the restaurant seems to be the restaurant seems to be owned and run by a couple of green insectile humanoids with four arms each, and their heads are reminiscent of praying mantises. One of these aliens walks up to the booth with a pen and paper in two of their hands, while a third hand hands out water cups on a serving plate in their fourth hand. Welcome to Blue Eden Diner, the premier dining experience of Blue Eden. I'm Gladys, and I will be your server. What can I get for you? You guys have a menu, and there's only six items on the menu. The first two are beer and water. The next four are a Crinian beetle sashimi, Geekus fried noodle, chicken and egg soup, and arboreal salad.
What the fuck was her name? Glinda?
Gladys.
Gladys, lovely name. I'll have the fried noodles, please.
One fried noodle. She writes it down.
Could I have the sashimi, please, and a water?
Okay, sashimi and a water.
She brought you water.
Well, she just brought you water, so you have water.
Then I'm solid. just the sashimi, please.
So sashimi, fried noodle.
Yeah.
Sebastian's looking at the menu to see if there's like more options. Like,
there are.
I know, isn't that? He's just kind of like, can I just get meat? I mean,
There's Geekus and the fried noodle.
Sure, that sounds good. I don't know what any of this is.
He just puts that
menu. Like, sure, I'll take two of those.
Okay, two. So two, one. That's three,
swear,
and then
you stick
one
out like
other
sore
thing.
Thumbs.
I know. Prim says, "I'll take a soup, please." She goes, "Okay." And then Victoria's all, "Just give me three beers."
Yeah.
Oh, I'll take one of those too, please.
Four beers, it is. Okay, so
on second thought, I'll have a beer.
Okay, five beers. So she takes an order.
Could I have a beer, please? Just make that six
beers.
Six total. Gladys, you're a doll. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no,
love
no
it.
Problem.
Love it.
And so
I'm sorry. Can I have extra napkins?
She walks
please?
Away at this point.
Can I get some Sled Ranch?
And she says, "I got
some wasabi, please.
I got one hopper and three fried doorstops, one wet mystery."
This is straight some Emperor's New Groove shit.
I love it.
And you hear a voice from behind. Got it.
She just say wet mystery?
She did. I don't know what that is.
Was that mine? Or wait.
Is that?
Maybe the soup.
Maybe
the
soup.
Oh,
yeah.
There you go. That's right. Some Prim got soup, huh?
What was the
So
what was
she
the rating
she comes
restaurant?
Back with all six of your beers pretty quickly.
Hey.
Hands them out. Victoria cracks one open. She immediately just guzzles a full beer down.
I don't know why I didn't start drinking alcohol sooner. This is fantastic.
Alcohol is very nice.
It's nice. It's pretty good.
Fortunately, it hardly does anything to me anymore.
So there's a moment of silence, and Victoria begins to speak unprompted. I was born a Mechanus.
Oh, just right in. Oh, cool.
And she's not even looking at you guys.
Yeah, we're all like, just so uncomfortable.
Just like, oh shit.
And pause like mid dream.
Like, fuck.
Like, everybody knows we don't do this.
That's hilarious. I was born a Mechanus, primary world of the Cyber Federation. I've lived most of my life under dwarven rule. I grew up in the streets of Craghammer, a slum neighborhood in the capital city. I know none of you probably know this, so I'll just fill you in. The Cyber Federation is built on a fairly rigid caste system. On top, you have the Throom caste, which is made up of an elite aristocracy of highborn dwarves. Below them is the Rak caste, essentially a middle-class society of dwarves. Some are wealthy and influential, but others are much closer to the poverty line than any of them would admit. All have more rights and privileges afforded to them than any of the castes below them, though. There are two other castes that aren't important to the story that I'm about to tell all of you, but since we're on the subject, there's the Ord caste, which is made up of the numerous known clans of the Federation, and the Cadral caste, made up of the largest population of Warforged in the galaxy. Mm-hmm. But then there are the castless. Some call them the Lost caste, which is made up of everybody else. My mother raised me and my baby cousins on her own until I was about 10 years old. About that time, she became ill, and within a year, it was me taking care of her and my cousins. Both Dag and Dirk were only 5 at the time. I wish I could say I did a good job of it, but begging and odd jobs in the ghettos of Mechanus isn't exactly a lucrative endeavor. We couldn't afford a doctor, and we could barely afford food. My mother was dead within 2 years. Somehow, I managed to make it to the age of 16, and at that point, I did the same thing every castless does when they don't have a future or any options. I joined the military. They trained me up, they gave me a uniform, put a plasma rifle in my hands, and they assigned me a post on a base in bumfuck nowhere. The food sucked, and the pay was shit. Half of that was going to my cousins back home. The watches were long and soul-crushing. Honestly, though, it was the most well-off I'd ever been at that point, and I didn't complain. Then 2 years later, 2 years into my 8-year enlistment, the Third Goblin War broke out. There never was a good war or a bad peace, and the damn Throoms had no qualms sending the castles to die. I saw my fair share of action. Almost every friend I made was killed in action, so I stopped making friends and I started drinking. She takes a long draw from her beer at this point. The war was the first time I ever saw one of the damn pointy ears. Everyone knows the Cyber Federation answers to the Elven Empire, but they rarely collaborate so closely as they do during war. They were like nothing I'd ever seen before. They were tall, graceful, strong. They had faces that looked like they were carved from marble, and glowing eyes. I once saw a drunken dwarven officer challenge an elf soldier to an arm wrestling match. That officer wasn't just strong, he was dwarf strong, and that elven soldier snapped his forearm mid-match. I once witnessed their sorcerers create a cosmic storm that swallowed a goblin dreadnought whole. They terrified me. Most of the war was a blur until they stationed me at a lunar outpost on Rachnar 5 defending military supply lines. There was a lot less fighting, and that's where I met him, Asimov Starbrand. He was an Asimov. Yeah. He was an engineer and mechanic that upkept various ships and vessels on base. He was a dwarf from a fairly well-to-do Ratcast clan. He was young and handsome for a dwarf, which is not a word I use lightly when describing dwarfs. He had a certain naivety to him that only the young and privileged can achieve. But he was also the smartest man I had ever met. Naturally, I completely despised him. Mm-hmm. To be fair, I despised all dwarfs at that point in my life, and I had nothing personal against Asimov. I hardly even knew he existed except as one of those nerdy science dwarves. Until I got myself into a bit of trouble due to my sharp tongue and a serious alcohol problem. I was out getting plastered at the local bar, and some slimeball dwarven officer decided to take advantage of the situation and come on to me. Normally, I know how to schmooze my way out of those situations diplomatically, but on this night, I was particularly drunk and particularly angry. I don't remember what exactly I called that officer, but I will never forget the look of absolute shock and embarrassed anger on his ruddy, bulbous face. He lifted his hand to strike me, and suddenly there was another person standing between us and facing him. The officer tried to push past him, but the new dwarf stopped him. Then the officer spit a slur into my face that I will not repeat here. The newer dwarf, who I recognize at this point as that Asimov fellow, threw out what I found out later to be the first punch of his life. It was a pretty good one. He broke that lecher's nose. Asimov may have been the smartest man I was yet to ever know, but in that moment, I was much smarter. I fled while everyone was distracted by the commotion. He didn't, and he got landed in 3 days of solitary confinement for striking an officer of the Throom caste. It took me a week before I decided I needed to thank him. I tried to just forget about it, but the thought of owing anything to a dwarf, even a simple thank you, was galling for me. I ended up finding him in a garage on the outskirts of town. He was covered in grease and oil, elbow deep into an engine of a private star cruiser that probably hadn't flown in 50-plus years. Before I could say a thing, he asked me if I knew my way around an engine. I told him I didn't. He asked me if I wanted to. Fast forward 2 weeks later, and we got that hunk of junk airborne. I never did end up thanking him like I had meant to. We became two peas in a pod after that. He taught me mechanics and completely bored me out of my mind with the higher sciences. I taught him how to fight and made him laugh with stories of my exploits and cleverness. I started to spend less and less nights out drinking and more nights stargazing and talking with Asimov. It ended up we both had resentment for the Federation and the caste system that exploited and oppressed its people. He told me the story of his life and how he had forgone his family fortune and his family name by joining the military, disowned by his overbearing father. I told him the story of my mother and my life in Craghammer. That was the first time I'd ever told anyone that story. I don't know at what point I had fallen in love with Asimov, but I remember the moment that I realized that I was. I woke up one morning and had an epiphany that not only would I rather spend my time with him than go report to my watch, but that I'd rather spend time with him than do any other thing in the universe that I could think of. I realized that just the thought of never seeing Asimov again made me wholly terrified, and I realized that I needed to tell him how I felt. So I did. That night, after my watch, I sprinted to his housing unit. I pounded on his door till he woke up, and I told him that I loved him and that I wanted to spend the rest of my life with him. He got down on one knee and asked for my hand in marriage. I said yes. And in that moment, we both agreed that we had a huge problem. You see, dwarves marrying outside of arranged marriages is unorthodox. Dwarves marrying outside their caste is extraordinarily rare and almost borderline taboo. A dwarf marrying a casteless is absolutely forbidden. To do so was to risk imprisonment for him and worse for me. So we deserted. We had no long-distance transportation of our own, so we bartered a passage onto a religious missionary vessel passing through. The Cyber Federation doesn't have an official stance on religion, and they allow missionary groups to preach to the troops in exchange for a little bit of money and that they provide some form of entertainment for the bored soldiers. The Faithful of Unity was thankful. Well, no, excuse me. The Faithful of Unity, thankfully, was intensely empathetic to our situation. Honestly, we couldn't have made up a better story than the truth for them. It had everything they loved. Two individuals oppressed by an atheistic regime, breaking down the barriers of caste and race and uniting despite all outside resistance through love. They ate that shit up. As soon as we made the first hyper jump, the Faithful officiated our marriage, and they took us as far from the Imperial and Federation influence as they could. We ended up in the Draconic Star Sovereignty. Along the way, I had picked up the religious bug, partially because I was thankful to the Faithful, and partially because their teachings resonated with me. She starts, like, flicking her medallion at this point. I'm going to fast forward the story here. We got on our feet. We started a business. We hired people to extract my cousins off Mechanus. We built a ship, and we named it after my mother. Those were the happiest years of my life. But in our happiness, we were careless. I don't know what mistake we made to tip off our identities, but regardless, both the Empire and Federation had enough information to identify us when a job took us near the border of Imperial space. We stopped at a way station, not unlike this one. We were intercepted as we exited the Brunhilde. Elven headhunters. They told us to drop our weapons and put our hands up. Asimov yelled a directive code at Artax, who immediately shielded me and started carrying me back on board. The headhunters opened fire. Asimov ordered Dag to start the ship. I saw three plasma bolts strike Asimov in the chest. He collapsed. I struggled free as Artax closed the door behind us. And as the Brunhilde lifted away, I watched through a window and witnessed an elf approach and stab my husband through the heart. At this point, the food comes. And
just crying.
Yeah.
I'm just straight bawling. I'm just
frozen.
Right,
Sebastian's sitting there frozen with his hand on his beard. Just like, oh, shit.
The waitress moves away, and Victoria takes another long chug, and she goes, "So that's who I am." And then she just falls silent.
What? How do you... Oh, my God, Vicky.
damn, that sucks.
She just takes another swing of beer. She's not even looking at your ass.
Yeah, fucking I'm so asshole. Sorry, damn, that sucks. Vicky. That's one of the saddest things I've ever heard. Now I know why you hated us so much when you saw us.
What?
Just because, you know, she closed herself off. She didn't want to. She didn't want to open herself up to us.
Break down those walls. Yeah.
There was a point where you asked her about her past, and she got really not happy with you.
Like,
I remember
you,
that.
Dog, I don't know you.
Yeah, basically,
it's like Carter. Their interactions. That's right. It's all coming back. That's the reason Carter just like waits for somebody to start talking, and then like takes his notebook out. Like, I can't ask you people shit. There's so many questions.
Oh, man. Yeah, you guys get your food in front of you. The Genghis fried noodle just looks like a stir fried noodle with some sort of like pork like meat. Mm. It ain't pork, but it's meat.
Close enough.
Carter's taking it out and putting it on Bass's plate.
The Ukrainian beetle sashimi is literally like raw beetle wrapped around like rice balls.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have any like teriyaki sauce or like a, you know, fuck, what's it, sriracha?
Sriracha.
Something of that fantasy sriracha.
Oh yeah, we're all stocked up on the sriracha. I'll get you some.
Please.
That thing lasted a long time.
It did, yeah.
This episode brought to you by sriracha.
Fantasy sriracha.
Space sriracha.
Space sriracha.
Okay. So yeah. So now there's another awkward moment of silence.
Yeah.
As you guys are just kind of sitting there in the booth.
You know, I don't really know how to like segue into, you know, like how do you
I'm sorry.
Like, how do you follow that? You know what I mean? Like, what exactly is
that? Like, that was funny as shit because it sounded like you were saying it in character.
I was. Oh, okay. I was definitely saying that in character.
Shit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you guys know, I guess you guys don't know too much about my past, but I was from a tribe of Firbolgs in our time. We're kind of like nomads, just kind of going from forest to forest. And, you know, when, like, our people are kind of rare in our time, people don't usually take well to us. So we try to stay pretty far into the mountains or it's pretty far into the forest so nobody sees us. But, you know, that's not too easy when you kind of stick out like I do. Firbolgs usually, I mean, you saw those gardener things, peoples. They're like gray, kind of. Yeah. And, you know, I'm like white. I stick out a little bit.
Albino. Yeah, I
am stark white. So it's a little bit hard for me to disguise myself. And that disguise things that I can do only lasts for an hour. And then, you know, we're kind of screwed. So so when I was younger, you know, long story short, my parents, when they were packing up camp and leaving, they just kind of left me when I was, you know, like 2 or 3.
They just straight abandoned your albino
ass. They just left me. They all packed up and they, you know, sat me behind a tree with some, you know, like a bag and stuff and just kind of left.
Stay here, honey. We'll be right back.
Generally, basically, yeah.
Victoria reaches across the table to your beer, cracks it open, and then, like, passes it to you.
Yeah, I'll take it and be like, cheers, hon.
And then chug it. The closest hug you're going to get right now,
babe. Yeah, I'll cheers her and chug it and be like, so, you know, I was by myself a lot. Somehow I figured, you know, I figured stuff out. Me being a firbolg, I could kind of talk to animals. So, you know, they kind of helped me every now and then. And, you know, if I was hurting for food or if I was hurting for shelter or something like that, you know, I would talk to one of them and they kind of helped raise me. So I'm not, you know, I wasn't very acclimated to being around a lot of people. You know, you guys are the closest thing I have ever had to a family, which is, you know, nice.
Carter like is like he puts a flask out somewhere. He's like, it says 4 emergencies on the side. Yeah.
He's like, stage 5 clinger break.
The glass. Something stronger than beer here.
So you're literally raised by the forest.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's crazy.
And that's kind of why I I took the druid path that I did because I've always kind of been more animalistic than others, and it kind of made sense for me just to be that connected to nature and creatures. And you know, then I met you guys, and we traveled through time, and and all sorts of crazy shit has happened since then. But yeah, that's me. And I'll drink my beer.
Thanks. Sebastian's gonna put his hand on Percy.
Yeah. It's cool. I found you guys.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
I'm sorry, Percy. That's rough.
It's all right.
You got us.
Like
family.
Like Carter was saying, tragedy happens. What was that? Yeah.
Yeah, damn, that sucks.
Thanks, Carter. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that
indeed
means a lot.
Indeed. Oh, man. Well,
all these super sad stories. Get ready for this good backstory.
my story pales in comparison. It just doesn't stand up to the both of yours. It's not tragic. Well, I guess it is. Now that I think about it, man, that shit was tough.
Into the grass.
He was like, takes another swig of his beer. Yeah, this shit's good.
Yeah. Feeling good, beer, yeah.
Yeah, well, growing up with my father, my mother, my dad didn't allow us to drink alcohol, couldn't have spicy foods, everything was just bland.
Couldn't have spicy food?
No, nothing.
Too much exposure.
The spices were too worldly.
It was just like everything was bland, like everything was nothing to mess with our senses or dull our senses. Everything we had to stay sharp at all times. Ooh. My father was a human, dark complexion, dark hair. My mom, orc. Green skin. I do have gray skin, but it's probably just the way that, you know, the skin tones between my father and my mother. I came out with green skin, or more of the grayish tone skin. It's kind of an outcast of that. But with my father, he kept us inside. He kept us sheltered. Almost felt like prisoners most of the time. And it's, man, my poor mother. What she had to go through was... She always wanted me to get out of there. She wanted to just leave some way, somehow. But we just couldn't. Couldn't go against my father. I never understood why. I just always felt like we could just run, just go. But we just never went. My mom would always tell me that her father was a chieftain. And that we would be safe with her family. So I never understood why we couldn't just leave. But I think my mom was just afraid. Scared of my father. Just the power he had. My mom, she was just a strong, sweet person, rugged and beautiful. It's what we had to go through with my father was I can't even talk about it too much. I just
Victoria reaches across cracks open your beer and heads
and
to
I
you.
Just chug it at this point. The discipline that we had to go through, well, more of myself than my mother. I have so many whip marks across my back for stuff I've done. What? Anytime I try to speak Orcish, I was punished. My mom would teach me on the sly without my father knowing. So I learned, picked up some words here and there, but for the most part, yeah, he made us push down the Orc heritage. And then one day, he caught me speaking Orc to my mother.
Oh, no.
I can tell you one thing, that was not a good day. Have you guys ever had hold buckets of water out to your side, straight out to your side?
Ooh. I don't think
just
so.
Just straight out. To your side, as soon as my arm started dropping, whipped it with a cane. Oh, I just... No. I will give him this, though. It will. It did teach me how to be strong and strong. Fight through pain. That's for damn sure.
Victoria is on her third bridge. She'll built up those shoulders.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Got that AC straight through the roof.
And then one day, when my father was out on a mission of some sort, didn't tell me too much about his missions. He just told me that one day I'd be a champion of Sargonis, his god. And that was supposed to be the god I'm supposed to follow. And I did follow. But while he was gone, 5 orcs showed up at our door. And my mom recognized them. And I couldn't understand exactly what they were saying. I only knew a little bit of orc. But I just knew that they said that they're looking for us for a long time. And they're glad, glad they found us. And they're going to take us home. So we left. We just got the bare necessities. We just took off. We left.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
I did not know this about you.
Out in the wilderness for 2 full days, just traveling, learning about the orc heritage, learning about my mother, learning orc. My mom even gave me her dagger that she kept hidden, an orc dagger. Mm-hmm. And on it is engraved, "Our blood is our strength."
Ooh.
And something I've always kept with me, something I keep close to my heart. Probably about 2 days in, 2 wonderful days. I mean, this is the happiest I've ever been those days, traveling with them.
Two of them?
2 days.
Okay.
Not many more than that. 2 great days.
Why?
Storm came in at nighttime, and we heard something in the distance coming.
Oh, no.
Didn't know what it was.
Oh, no.
Here comes the thunder.
Exactly.
Thunderdome, bitch.
Part of the sky opened up, and a beam of light shot down, and beyond the trees, I saw my father.
Jesus.
Just light up.
Oh, your dad was Thor, so that's cool and scary.
And all of a sudden, next thing I know, it was scary but beautiful at the same time. Just the way he moved, it was like music almost. He came running through the camp, just slicing his axe left and right.
Jesus.
It happened so fast, I don't know the details. I just know that within a couple minutes, he was the last one standing beyond those 5 orcs that had taken my mother and I away.
What?
In some way, somehow, during that whole exchange, my mother got pushed, and she fell onto a spike on the ground off a tree, impaled her.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
And I could see the life just leaving her. So I walk up to her, and he looks down at his stump of his arm right now.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I forgot. Like, yeah, one arm.
And he's like,
one
and
arm
with my right hand, I reached out and I touched her face.
Oh,
and
I was
like, Mom. And she just looked at me.
We got moms dying left and right.
Yeah, just like, Mom. And she just looked up to me. She's like, "You are special. Keep fighting to become who you're meant to be. I love you." And just at that moment, I saw the life just fade out. So I don't know if my father killed her or if it was just an accident. We did bury her, and we did go back. We left, my father and I. But to this day, I don't know if he's the cause of her death or if it was just an accident.
Oh, man. I'm crying again.
I'm crying again.
I'm weeping again, and I'm just going to hug him. And like, oh, my God, Sebastian.
And for the longest time, I didn't know what to do with my father. Seeing what he was capable of doing, the fear of life was I followed his rules to the T. No matter what he said, I did. He just starts chugging his beer.
Nice. I think at this point, like, everyone realizes what's happening. Everyone just turns to look at Carter.
Oh, sorry, I missed.
Your turn.
Damn, that sucks.
Do you have a family member that's dead?
Carter's like,
Is that too crap? Too soon? Too straightforward?
All right. All right. I grew up in a small town. My mother was a strict woman, sharp tongue, like
Can
a
I
knife.
Roll insight on Carter real quick? I want to know if he's
telling
the truth.
Wait till the story's over.
Excuse you.
First of all, how dare you?
My mother was a strict woman with a tongue sharp like a knife. My father was busy with his studies often, but he made time for me here and there and made sure that I studied as well. I've always been of the book and grew up as such. One day we came to some money from a deceased family member from across the pond, and we moved, and there you have it. All of a sudden, I was treated like a noble, like a very, very wealthy boy. Growing up, I went to private school. I researched history and arcana and became exactly the person they expected me to be. And one day when I was but a teenager in my third year of upper class, I came home from my studies and my parents were gone. Disappeared, vanished. Nobody knew where they'd gone. Nobody had seen them leave the house. No one had any record of speaking with them. I asked. I filed a report with the police, and there was no one to be found. I used their inheritance to continue my way through school, got my degree, and went to serve the king. And that's when I met all of you.
Go ahead and roll insight.
Ooh, that's a good one. It's a 19.
It's really good.
It's not the whole truth.
Oh, okay.
It's a part of the truth.
I don't want to say that Sebastian would realize it's not the truth. He'd be just, it really, it'd probably raise some questions.
Interesting. You're a bandit too, Carter.
That's like, hilarious.
Tears
we all have dead pirates.
Oh, what was the name of the city we're from? It's been so long.
Oh my god. Oh, it's been, hold on, I got in my notes back here.
Okay.
Castilian. That
Castilian.
Was
yeah, that's Castilian. Where that's eventually I moved to Castilian as a researcher, working under a nobleman. And I just basically delved myself into study. That's all I ever did. Studied magic, studied history. I had a wealth of books. I had a jar filled with taffy. I had liquor in my cabinets.
Taffy?
I fucking love Carter.
I was considered a sage in the town.
I feel like the legs are getting bigger.
Yeah, that one. That one.
Okay, cool.
cool.
People came to me for help with knowledge and advice, but eventually they stopped coming, and I couldn't figure out why. I'd offer them food and drink when they were at my abode, but you know, things change. I ended up taking contracts from the king, one of them being to research a magical signature, the likes of which had never been seen before in the land. And as I said, Miss Victoria, when we first met, that those are the circumstances in which we've now fallen under your care.
I told you I believed you.
For some reason, I thought you did. Yes.
You know those walls we talked to? She had those walls.
She cracks open your beer and passes it back to you.
Beer doesn't really get the job done, but, you know, I'm going to need a little bit of pushing on the back end. So, cheers.
So, as you're taking your drink.
Is this the future? Do we know? It feels like the future. Anyway.
Just start drinking. Do we even know?
Can't figure it out.
I like that.
Can I have some of that flask? Can I have? Do you mind if I take a sip?
Oh, here. I need
some of the hard shit.
I've got a spare.
Point.
I just start passing out. Wow. I just start passing out flasks. Anybody else want one? I've got several.
I'll take one.
That screws it with his teeth because he's
missing Prim takes one. She takes a long draw. And she puts it back down on the table. She begins
Ooh,
to
was
speak.
That the... Never mind.
Which one did you drink?
Whoa, truth serum.
That's strong shit.
She will now tell me everything. No. That's not. That's
does
not
she
it.
Turn into a llama?
No. No, no, and no. But she does begin to speak. Oh. When I first awoke,
I think we're all be like, what?
Yeah, yeah, book out.
when I
Carter has a recorder on his bracer.
A bracer jack.
Sure, yeah. Boop.
She's like,
I can't touch mine.
You guys are ridiculous. When I first awoke, before I was sent to live with the Illithids, I lived in a research center run by Dr. Zahn and his scientific team. I didn't really have much of a childhood, but Dr. Zahn liked to teach me things and to tell me stories. There was one story he used to tell me fairly regularly when putting me to bed. Long, long ago, before the stars all had worlds of their own, there was one world, one land with one sky above it. And in this land, many kings and queens ruled over nations and peoples of this one land. Of these kings and queens, nine were counted as the greatest among them. They created many wonders and they forged the greatest nations. It is said that even their very names rang with power, and that their descendants were part of sacred bloodlines that held a deep and secret power. Though these nine were not united and at times even warred against one another, under their rule the peoples of this one land grew prosperous and bountiful. But nothing is eternal, and the nine began to envision a world after their rule had ended. They feared a time may come when their subjects needed them, but they were no longer of this world. And so the nine came together to forge a sacred treasure imbued with their power. They hid it away in a place only those of the sacred bloodlines and the secret knowledge could find it, so that in a time of great need, their power may be called on again. The nine did eventually pass from life, and with their deaths they performed a final wonder. The nine sang out to the heavens to beseech the stars, and the stars, moved by their power, created worlds of their own, many lands with many skies, for the peoples of one land and one sky to find and to cultivate on their own. Dr. Zahn always told me that it was me who was meant to find the sacred treasure.
Dope.
It's a long, long bedtime story.
You're probably asleep by like the middle of it, right?
I heard it so many times I could recite it in my sleep.
You ever go looking?
I think that's what the Illithids were trying to do. We did a lot of experiments, and they never seemed too pleased by the results. Eventually, their focus shifted to time distortion rather than space travel.
Did they say why? You happen to know what the purpose of that would be for?
I don't know, but I think it upset the elves.
Upset me a little bit too, honestly. Maybe that has something to do with what's going on. Yeah.
Victoria holds her hand out and grabs Prim by the hand. She goes, I want to help you, Prim. Whatever it is that you want to do, I want to help you.
I also want to help you, Prim.
Me too.
Me too.
And my axe.
And my axe. My axe. And so I guess we'll end the scene with the camera kind of panning from the table and out the window and kind of zooming slowly in on this beautiful blue nebula out in the outreaches of space. And the more fucking elves show up. Psych! No, but just the kind of this calm, serene scene. And before we end today's session, you guys leveled up, and I want to talk about that. So why don't you guys tell the audience what level 6 versions of you look like?
So buff.
So buff.
Oh, my God.
So strong.
Biceps the likes of which you've never imagined. Triceps that could topple mountains.
That could topple mountains.
Upon a flex.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Sure.
My main thing really is I get my extra attack now. Mm-hmm. So that's beautiful.
That's awesome. That's like stellar.
I'm so happy.
Mm-hmm. Deltoids that crush a man.
I do get my aura of protection. Which now anybody within 10 feet of me
is going to be a pain in my dick. I forgot paladins get that.
Your passive unique abilities.
Paint
our dungeon master right in the dick.
People who are familiar with paladins now, anybody within 10 feet of me will get a plus to their skill saving throws with my charisma mod, which is a +3.
Ooh.
+3 in all saving throws now.
Sick. So I can really use that. Got some names.
Still going to suck on the dex saves, but whatever. Hey, that's cool. And then other than that, I get a couple more. I get two second level spell slots.
Oh, nice.
And I get two more spells. Or one more spell. I was at 5, now I'm at 6.
So. Nice.
Hell yeah. I get
I can wild shape into CR2 Ooh. Creatures now.
Which we'll have to come up with.
Yes, which is dope. My attacks when I'm wild shaped count as magical now.
Oh, nice.
Yes.
Ooh, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's just in time, quite literally.
Yeah. I was like, oh, they're level 6. I'm going to start throwing the big boys at them. But so they're ready for me, apparently.
And then I get level 3 spells, too.
Mm. Nice.
So I'm going to be calling lightning and doing all sorts of cool stuff. Yeah.
Very cool.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I, at level 5, let's see, I got a new spell, which I will pick at some point. I now cast 3rd level spells, and I got a new invocation. So I think I'm taking Armor of Shadows. I know I'm taking Armor of Shadows. Things are getting dicey.
Indeed.
And I can
they
really
are.
Use this is going to put a +2 on my AC from 12 to 14.
Yeah.
So yay. That's effectively an ability score increase. So let's go. I had it at level 1 or 2 or whatever we were, and it just like it wasn't as pertinent as it is now. And at level 6, I got my our proficiency bonus all went up to 3.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's good to know. Yeah.
I thought it was 3 earlier. It wasn't. Not earlier, like in a few episodes ago.
Yeah.
I got at level 6. I got my otherworldly patron feature, which is this this entropic ward. So I can impose disadvantage on somebody and on an attack roll. If they miss it, I get advantage on my next attack.
Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah, so that's cool when I, like, you know, for using, like, my very precious spell slots.
Right.
So let's see. And I got an additional spell there, so that's 2 new spells I need to pick. And, yeah, that's Carter.
Nice.
I need to roll my HP.
Yeah, out. I was going to say, what's everyone's HP now?
Should I be 57. Rolling it?
57.
I'm at 42.
42.
What am I, a D8?
You are a D8. Go ahead and roll
here
those.
We go.
8.
Ooh. Oh, my God.
Here we go again, everybody.
You make up for AC with HP.
And 6.
Boom. Oh, nice. So plus
20 more
plus
HP.
Your con mod.
That's plus
times.
6. So 8 and 6 plus 6. So 12,
that's
16.
20. That's,
no, wait, no. Yeah.
Yeah, it's 20 HP extra, right? Is that right?
8 and 6 plus 6, that's 20, yeah. So I'm at 57 HP.
Holy shit, you just keep keeping up with the goddamn paladin. You need to look in the toughness feat, my friend.
No, I know, I actually have thought about that.
Ooh, I'm so bad. I need it, guys.
And with that, I think we're going to call it a game. If you guys enjoy Super Quest Saga and what we do here at the Dungeon Cast, please leave a like, a subscribe, and a comment below. Share the show with a friend, word of mouth, maybe on Twitter, maybe on Instagram, however you want. And with that, we will talk to you guys later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I was going to say something like semi-poetic.
Something about a tragedy and we're twining through all our lives.
Oh, yeah. All right, here I go. Damn, that sucks.